This is part one of our four-part playtest of Moonlight Vale, a Stardew Valley-inspired tabletop role-playing game that I helped design alongside my co-writer, Megan Caldwell. I'm going to quickly introduce ourselves. My name is Alex Rubitsky. I use he, they pronouns. I work with the Gauntlet in helping write games, managing social media accounts. I also, as mentioned, helped make this game. And I'm also the co-host of the Darkened Threshold podcast alongside Jason Cordova, where we talk about mechanics from these types of games, as well as like the broader mystery and horror genres. But we're not here for horror. We're here for Moonlight Vale. So yeah, that is me.
Hi, I'm Kevin, he, him pronouns. I've been playing Carve from Brindlewood games for almost a year now. I also wrote one of the mysteries that got picked up for public access, so I'm a little familiar with the Brindlewood system. And in terms of like the Stardew Valley stuff, Stardew Valley is like the only game in this sort of like genre that I'm familiar with, as opposed to like Animal Crossing, Harvest Moon, things like that. But Stardew should hopefully carry me pretty far.
I'm Jazzy, she, her pronouns. I also play with Alex in the public access Signals from the Other Side actual play, which has been very fun. This is sort of a play test for me because when I don't know the touchstones of a game, I usually get frightened and don't want to play it. And I'm not actually familiar with any, like I haven't played any of the games. But usually like CFV games are like so good at getting the genre across that I wanted to give it a shot anyway and kind of maybe be help from that perspective. Like, does that work even if you don't know the touchstones? So I'm very excited. And this is Maki here to join us all.
Hi, I'm Patrick, he, him pronouns. As far as my like familiarity, I've played a lot of Between and Public Access. I got to play test the Between before there was even a Brindlewood. As far as Stardew Valley, I've played enough to like know the game and the mechanics, but not enough to know the story really. So I'm sort of in that like in between familiarity as well.
Very nice, awesome. Well, let's. I'm gonna walk us through the guided little session one procedure that we've written up for this. Starting with CATS. CATS is an acronym that stands for concept, aim, tone, and subject matter. The purpose of CATS is to establish some basic expectations for what this game is about and what we're going to be doing during this first session. So, Moonlight Vale is a tabletop role-playing game about a group of problem solvers, the Community Watch of Crossing Town, who are tasked with helping out a small rural community known as Crossing Town. The Community Watch, or Watchers, look into matters both mundane and magical, solving problems and completing odd jobs around the community. They gradually become aware that the supernatural forces in and around town are beginning to butt up against mundane life, causing problems for its residents. The Watchers will ultimately be forced to maintain the balance between these things, all while balancing out their own lives. Moonlight Vale takes inspiration from Studio Ghibli movies, American folktales, fantasy literature, and farming sim video games such as Stardew Valley and Harvest Moon. The game's mechanics are based on Apocalypse World, Brindlewood Bay, and The Between. You don't need to know anything about those games in order to play. The aim of the characters in the story is to keep their community safe by investigating the supernatural oddities taking place there. Our aim as players is to learn more about these characters, as well as to paint a vivid picture of our version of Crossing Town, a responsibility we all share, and the surrounding wilderness of Moonlight Vale. The aims of today's session are to create and introduce our characters, learn the basics of how the game works by playing it, and then having a debrief period at the end. The tone of this game is lighthearted, bouncing between the utterly mundane and the incredibly fantastical. During the day, the town and surrounding areas should be grounded in the real world and the humans of Crossing Town. In contrast, when night falls, spirits come out to play, ghosts reveal themselves in the cemetery, and fantastical creatures interact with just about everyone. Your characters are familiar with these dualities, and they should treat both the mundane workday and the mysterious nighttime with the same seriousness. Subject matter: poverty, gentrification, possession, alcohol and drug abuse, ritual magic, and other potentially difficult subject matters can come up in this game. We'll talk more about safety tools in just a moment, but in the interest of setting expectations right now, you should know that this game is generally lighthearted, but occasionally explores some intense subject matter. So speaking of safety tools, no game is more important than the people playing it. We're going to aim to tell the best story we can, but we're going to do it in a way that respects everyone's boundaries of safety and consent. We'll be using three safety tools today: the open door policy, the X card, and lines and veils. The open door policy is very simple. You can leave the game for any reason, and you don't have to explain yourself. Just let us know you have to go. No one will ask any questions about it. The X card is here in case something in the game makes you feel uncomfortable in an unfun way. Just type X card in the chat or say X card out loud, and we will stop play in order to change whatever just happened in the game. I may ask for clarification on what is being X carded, but I will never ask you why. We will resume play once the change is made. Finally, we're going to be using lines and veils. Lines are things we are not going to have in the game, period. Veils are things that we're okay with being in the game, but we prefer not to roleplay them, or we simply want to keep them off screen. I will start by sharing my own personal lines and veils right now. You can tell me your own lines and veils privately in the chat over break, and I will convey them to the group anonymously when we're back together. Even though these are not things I would remotely expect to come up in Moonlight Veil as a game, my go-to lines and veils, I always line sexual violence and sexual non-consent. And I usually veil sexual content. Those are mine. Again, you can message me privately over our break. But other than that, you know, hey, we're here to tell a fun little lighthearted story about small communities and magics. So before we begin character creation, I want to share a few more details about the setting. The game takes place in and around the small rural community of Crossing Town, the only settlement in a geographic region known as Moonlight Vale. It is a place inspired by rural Americana, though it does not take place in America or even our Earth. The valley is a several-hour drive from the nearest large city, surrounded by dense forests and a small mountain range. While the big city holds modern luxuries and conveniences, Moonlight Vale holds a spark of what most places have forgotten. Out here, fantastical creatures are real, remnants of ancient civilizations dot the land, and spirits share the world with humans, though it's typically polite to keep quiet about such things. The player characters are a group of people who have been living in Crossing Town for some time now. Crossing Town began as a gold rush settlement along the Moonlight River. When the ores dried up, the town never truly found its footing. Large parts of Crossing Town have fallen into disrepair, and it has largely been abandoned by the world at large. It has approximately 24 houses, a grocery store, a restaurant, a cafe, a library, a clinic, and a town hall. Children take the school bus to the next county over, but just as many parents choose to homeschool at the local library. Everyone knows everyone, and the town receives very few visitors. It is a place most only pass through. However, the town does have ample magical resources, and outside forces would be happy to exploit the town's current financial state. Unlike most places in the world, modern comforts and fantastical elements coexist in Crossing Town. Cell phones and the internet exist, and homes have electricity and running water, but there is a witch in the forest, and the mayor has a sword over the mantle. Even so, the magical elements of the world are rarely discussed by townsfolk. While not taboo, it's impolite to discuss such things while the sun is out. At the start of the game, these characters have not yet joined together to form the community watch. They each have been living in Crossing Town, attending to their various responsibilities, and feeling a slight lack of satisfaction in the directions their lives have taken them. We are going to explore their first experience solving problems between the mundane and magical together, leading to the founding of this new generation of Watchers. Different from other CFB games, which usually puts you in the situation like you've already been working together for a time. Like, no, you all may know each other, but we are going to explore the founding of the actual group dynamic in play. At this point, we are going to pause the recording to go over character creation details, and we will come back when we are ready to introduce our watchers. All right, we have made our characters. If you have not done so, go ahead and change your Zoom names to feature your character names and pronouns alongside your own. We are going to introduce them. So going to do the same order I did for introductions. Introduce your watcher by name, style, hobby, and their moonlight move. Starting with Kevin.
Alrighty. So Kai Cooper has a moonlight move of dreamer. I think he's like hangs out on the outskirts of the city. His style is old flannel shirt, a beat up backpack, sturdy jeans, but I think like they're always like there's at least one knee or like the ankles are just blown out, but they're still like holding together. So technically sturdy. His hobby is stargazing.
Very nice. Thank you. Jazzy.
Yes, I'll be playing Hazel Thorne, she/they. Her style is very witch-like. She has a sun hat that is, you know, slightly pointy, I think, very wide brim. She has a long skirt in earthy colors. She always has muddy boots. Their hobby is dancing. And the move that I picked is Laylooker. So essentially, I am more aware of the magical nature, and it's like my job to look for these hidden pathways called ley lines. And that gives me some stuff that I can do.
Very cool. And Patrick.
All right. I'm playing Scott Sweeney, he, him pronouns. And I went with the seamstitcher move, but I also kept some of the like city slicker idea. I think he's fairly new to town. There was probably like another tailor or whatever in town that retired recently, and there was a spot open sort of thing.
We'll actually get to that because there she's not retired, but you probably work with her.
Okay, so we'll talk about that.
Yeah.
So I went with for style a stylish scarf, and you know this is sort of anime linked, so it's obviously got to be like too long and blowing in breezes sort of thing. Leather jacket, a seemingly endless supply of new ones because they're always just too nice to get dirty, and then they get dirty because it's a pastoral setting. And graphic t-shirts because why not? And then for hobby, I went with playing an instrument, thinking violin right now because that makes that nice like violin, fiddle, fancy / pastoral divide.
I like that, yeah.
And then, like I said, my move is seam stitcher. So I'm good at repairing and patching things up. So if items in our quiet retreat are something that could be sewn back together, I'm good at unmarking them or keeping them going. And then I work with Mary Lee, the local tailor. There we go.
Yeah. So we'll talk about your relationship there in a moment. Very nice. Awesome. So I'm going to go back around now. We're going to talk about some aspects of your watcher, and then after you tell us that information, the rest of us are going to name one object that can be found in your watcher's personal belongings. You'll note these down in the section of your sheet called A Quiet Retreat, revising them as you wish. So Kevin, talk about Kai Cooper. So you picked the dreamer move, which you, if I recall, the text is like, you don't want to die in this town. You're like, you want to go out and see the world. Like you have aspirations. Okay. Gotcha.
Yep.
Where does Kai Cooper live in Crossing Town or around Crossing Town?
I think he has the closest house to the mountain range.
Okay.
And so that's why like he has the, one of the best views of like the stars and, well, it's not in the forest. That might actually be kind of the opposite direction. It is kind of on the outskirts.
Yeah, totally. Okay.
And you have to walk up a little trail. Like it's barely drivable to get up there. You have to walk up like a series of like wooden stairs that are like half of them are loose, and it's just a pain to get to.
How very Sebastian from Stardew Valley of you. Love that. Very good. Awesome. How old is Kai?
I think early to mid 20s.
Okay. Any like notable family members or pets?
Yeah, I think both of his parents still live in this house. I think they've been living in Crossing Town all their life. And that's kind of why Kai needs to leave.
Totally.
Yeah, no other siblings though. And I think there's a family dog. I don't know the dog's name yet.
That's totally okay. Love that. Now, as per your moonlight move, everyone's moonlight moves give them a connection to characters in the setting. For the dreamer, I'll read your move here. You have to diligently keep track of your funds and hope you can save enough for the goal. You regularly hang out and bemoan your life in town with Valerie Gonzalez, the local punk. What is your relationship there like? I will give you a little bit more detail about Valerie because we have a cast of some recurring characters in Moonlight Vale. This is by no means restrictive, but it just gives you a little bit about what we have here. Valerie Gonzalez is frequently seen in a leather jacket. She has bright dyed hair and usually smoking a cigarette. She's the younger sister of the town's like local handyman. She's still in high school. She dislikes being here and also wants to like escape the Vale for good. And I'd say that you would probably know that for reasons she would not disclose, she is currently attending therapy sessions with the town's priest. That's a little character detail I'll give you. So what do you think Kai's like relationship there is with this high school student like punk who just also wants to get out of the area?
I think it's a surrogate big brother relationship. I think by random stroke of fate, Valerie was in the middle of a blow up or a tantrum with some of her fellow classmates. Maybe she was being bullied and Kai was either out getting groceries or was just out in Crossing Town for some reason and happened to be walking by, broke it up, and like was just like, hey, let's go sit down and talk for a while. Okay. And they both kind of bonded over wanting to get out of the Vale.
Very nice. Well, with that in mind, what do we think are some items Kai has in his quiet retreat? I have an idea. Because you said your hobby was stargazing, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think you just have a telescope. You know, for looking at the night sky.
Very important for stargazing.
100%.
You said you had a pet, right?
Yeah, as it's beginning to get a little bit clear in my head. I think it's a Goldie. Golden Retriever.
So I think you have like a squirrel-shaped chew toy. Like the dog's favorite toy.
Okay.
I think you have a stack of postcards that show like distant and exotic locales that you hope to visit one day.
All right. How do you feel about those?
I love them all.
Fantastic. Jazzy, let's talk about Hazel. Where does she live in the Vale?
I think she lives somewhere like a bungalow slash hut, like in the edge of the forest, or maybe a little deeper in the forest.
Okay, I like that. We'll talk about your relationship with Marlene in a bit, but yeah, okay. How old is Hazel?
How old did we say that Kai was again? Sorry.
Like early to mid-20s?
Mid-20s, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think Hazel's probably something like that. Maybe like start 20s. Still pretty young, but like feels like she's very much an adult, you know, and has it all figured out.
Totally. Any notable family members or pets?
I think she has a toad called the Admiral. And she, I mean, she's got to have a black cat called Shadow Lord.
Incredible. Shadow Lord as in one word or two?
Two. Also called His Majesty and just the Lord. She doesn't use the last one around the priest, but we all know it's
that's
true.
Fine. The God of the Valley is a woman anyway. So
exactly,
yeah. Okay, fun. Love that. So yes, as per your move of Lay Looker, let me get it up here. You have received training in the fundamentals of magic from Marlene Jones, the local witch that lives in the Endless Weald. Let's talk about your relationship. So here's a bit about Marlene. Her vibe is comfortable flannels, and an assortment of like trinkets that she usually wears at her hip. Very like cottage core, lumberjack witch kind of vibes. Gracefully aged face, but is clearly like up there in years. She's the kind of woman who's like firm and not afraid to speak her mind. She knows a lot about the spirits and magic of the Vale. And lives in the Endless Weald in a small cottage, only really comes into town to celebrate festivals. So what do you think your relationship is, like, and other dynamics that come to mind immediately?
I'm thinking it's almost like a grandma slash mentor vibe. So it's both like there's a very motherly side to her, and she like very clearly cares for Hazel, but she also has like a whole lot of expectations of, you know, how the job has to be done, how it has to be carried on, how you do this and this and this. And there's like very much that element of, I am teaching you something, so do please listen.
I love that. And that's extremely true to Marlene's character. Amazing. All right. What do we think we can find in Hazel's quiet retreat? I'll do an easy one for me, at least. The Admiral.
I feel like you have to have either like a satchel of aromatics or like some kind of quartz or crystal. Something witchy in that vein. I'll let you pick like your favorite of those two.
I think like a drawer full of gauzy shawls, like all different patterns, either to make you look more witchy or for like set dressing sort of thing.
Oh, those are great. You like those, Jazzy? Fantastic. All right, let's talk about Scott Sweeney now. So same question, Scott. Where does he live?
as close as he can convince himself to the like, there is a downtown to this town.
As close to Main Street, it's just Main Street. Yeah. It's just, yeah.
I need to be able to see at least three other buildings, please.
Yeah. Very easy. Yeah. This is a single stoplight town and it's just bustling with activity over there. So it's the closest on Main Street. Love that. How old is Scott?
I think similar age, sort of mid-20s. Like he went to design school in the big city, and he's ready to make his mark on the pastoral world. I don't
I
know.
love that. I love make his mark on the pastoral world. I love this. What about any notable family members or pets?
I think he's got a sibling back in the city. We'll go with a sister.
Okay, cool. And yes, so as
And
per.
pets. I think he has a bird, parrot, something that sort of talks, because it had learned how to make like traffic and crowd noises when they were living in the city. And so that every now and then, like, it just makes a little bit of noise. It's so quiet here. It's nice to hear like a honking truck or someone screaming at a pedestrian.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, awesome. So, as per your move, you have a relationship with Mary Lee, Crossing Town's local tailor. Little bit about Mary. She owns oh God, what is the name of it? She owns the store, Ariadne's Loom is what it's called.
Oh, nice.
She's the tailor in town. She usually varies between being like horribly busy and horribly bored, but she's a very like boisterous kind of like laughing woman, laser focused on things. She has like dark hair, well-fitting clothes, very worn down shoes. And she is the only like clothing shop and tailoring service in town. The other alternative would be to go to would go to Mojo Mart, but I mean, who wants to go to fucking Mojo Mart?
Oh.
She has a husband and some kids, but yeah, I mean, like you help her. What do you think the relationship there is?
See, I think I came out here to like work with and learn from her. I think maybe she came and did like a lecture or master class sort of thing at the university or at the fashion school while I was there.
Interesting, very cool.
I don't know. I feel like Ariadne's Loom, she might be really good at lace or something like that.
Oh, very cool.
And so like I just got it in my mind that like I can learn from her. I can like perfect what I want to do working with
Like
her.
moved to
And
town, showed up on her doorstep and be like, I'm here to learn.
yes.
Like teach me.
You remember me from that weekend seminar 2 years ago? Obviously.
I was like, and then I imagine she's just like, yeah, she's like, well, I'm so overworked, so yes, I'll accept.
Here, patch these overalls.
Exactly. Welcome to rural living. Hope you're good at patching. Love that. Okay, what do we think Scott has in his quiet retreat?
I think everyone who studied in a big town needs to have stolen at least like one traffic sign. So I think you have like a traffic sign or a traffic cone that you brought from the big city with you.
Yeah, I'll figure out what the street name is at some point, but I love the traffic sign idea.
Gonna go ahead and give you your scarf as an item.
Oh, sweet.
And I'll give you your fiddle as an item.
Oh, nice. Love it.
Or violin, whichever one you go with,
It's definitely fiddle. What
yeah.
sort of hobo do you take me for?
Yeah. Awesome. Are you happy with those?
Yeah, no, those are great.
Awesome. Then with all that in mind, we are ready to start playing. Let's take a 10-minute break, and when we come back, I'll introduce our lines and veils and get us ready to dive into Crossing Town. All right, so before we begin playing, let me just communicate our lines and veils to everyone. We have lined, homophobia and transphobia, vomit and slurs, and our veils are harm to animals and eye injuries. We also have some ask firsts regarding alcohol and substance abuse, self-harm, and suicide. So if any of those topics come up, just make sure that we are addressing them tactfully and asking and checking in and all that. Also, I want to tell you that even though this game is set in an area inspired by the rural United States, we are not playing in the real world, and we aren't going to dwell on historical and cultural accuracy. We will do our best to represent the culture and vibes of Moonlight Vale, but, you know, we're going to not necessarily have anything aligned to one prescriptive set of things, and that's totally okay. Also, I'd like to point out that in the world of Moonlight Vale, things like race, nationality, gender, ethnicity, sexuality, disability, and neurodivergence are not a social barrier. If there are no other questions, very well, let us begin. So communicating this both to my players and anyone who's listening, Moonlight Vale has a tutorial, we're calling it an introductory scenario, that in the game text, we're going to say that if any of your players have never played Moonlight Vale before, run this, like start with this. This exists to really like set the stage, get the vibes of both the setting and the overall kind of like game stuff itself. So this table, this group will be the first people to ever play through this because this is a result of some previous playtesting. So we're going to kind of introduce mechanics, drip feed them to you. But we're going to start with a very narrative heavy tutorial opening sequences. So we'll get to explore a lot of fun character details. All right, let's do it. We begin this story as the sun is setting and a whistle echoes across Moonlight Vale. It comes from the train station outside of Crossing Town, departing just before sunset, carrying off some passengers and cargo to distant towns. The whistle travels from the platform down a single road, following the Moonlight River as it cuts through a dense forest. It passes over front porches and towards Main Street, waking the retired from their daydreaming and sleeping dogs from their afternoon naps. It passes by the grocery store, the diner, the cafe, the rundown library, and sun-bleached shutters of the old clinic. It passes through open doors and windows and fields and barns. The whistle eventually dies, and with it, so does another day. The last train out of Crossing Town signals that traffic has left and shops are closed up. There's no point in continuing work for some. There's no point in continuing pleasure either. At this hour, the only thing still open is the Sundrop Diner, the library, assuming it's a Wednesday, or, weather permitting, a fire pit in the park down by the lake. Thankfully, the evening is cool and the skies are clear, and so a bonfire has been lit. A question for each of you. What brings you out to the park instead of your usual evening routine?
There is a sidereal event going on tonight, either like a meteor shower or comet passing over, something up in the heavens, and I gotta see it.
Yeah, I think kind of jumping off that, I think the meteor shower or whatever is going to happen has a particular effect on some flowers that can only be picked tonight and are useful in my job as late.
And it was so quiet in my apartment tonight, like just nothing going. And I heard voices over in the park, like some people were gathered there, and I could not. I tried to read, I tried to like work on some designs and stuff, nothing, just pacing. It was awful.
Well, you aren't the only ones here tonight. There are a couple of familiar faces from around town. You see the mayor, Anna Limney, and her wife, Pauline Moore, down by the dock, each with a bottle of beer in hand. Frankie Gonzalez, the local handyman, is tending to the fire, flashing a smile to each person who stops by. Isabella Flores, the grocer, eventually drops by with a case of the good stuff, having just gotten off work herself. There is some idle chatter taking place, some small talk about the weather and far-off sporting teams, but the gathering is quiet. Eventually, Anna and Pauline make their way from the end of the dock to the bonfire. By this point, the fire has burned to little more than glowing coals. Anna smiles warmly as she approaches, though the lines in her face have clearly deepened in recent months. She says, "Glad to see someone making use of this old spot. It doesn't get nearly enough love these days, but it's always been my favorite place to just sit back and watch the world go by. In any case, I won't be keeping you long. After all, big day tomorrow with the jamboree and all." The last vestiges of sunlight fall behind the trees, leaving the last flickering flames the only light on this side of the lake. Anna holds her half-empty bottle out towards you all in a toast. "To Crossing Town and the Vale, to your health, and to the good fortune of all." To each of you, what do you toast to, regardless if you say it out loud or quietly to yourself?
To something different.
To distant shores.
To not fucking up.
The moon rises overhead, and with the toast and a drink, the day ends. Leaving only the long walk home and the night. Now, for those of you familiar with Brindlewood Bay and The Between, we're now going to introduce a mechanic from some of our games, which is the Unseen. The Unseen being a series of narrative prompts that the players get to read aloud and add to. Moonlight Vale uses an Unseen mechanic that we will explore in more depth later after this tutorial. For now, we are just going to narrate these prompts in turn, as I will assign them momentarily. There will be no connective tissue scenes between them. We're just going to kind of explore this narratively for now. This, I will put these in the chat. I'll put this in the chat for everyone's reference. But for now, I will say, I'm going to read this prompt out loud first. This is called "The Old Magic Stirs." The night is always host to more magic and mystery than the sunlit hours allow. In each region of the Vale, subtle wonders manifest under the blanket of twinkling stars. While the people of Crossing Town turn in their beds, heads full of sleep, the old magic of the land stirs. This first prompt is a paint the scene, so it'll be for everybody. This second prompt, I'm going to give to Scott. This third prompt for Hazel. I can paste it. There we go. And the last and fourth prompt for Kai. I'll read the paint the scene prompt, and then everyone can contribute details, and then we'll go in turn order from there. Paint the scene. The Endless Weald is an old forest that borders the Vale to the east and west. As moonlight shines through the canopy, dappling the forest floor in silvery blue hues, what glimpses of an ancient world can be seen between the trees?
I think some of the roots, as this moonlight illuminates them, they twist and round, like slither over the ground in such a way that they seem almost carved as if they were once foundations of something that was lost, something that is no longer there. The foundations, much like the forest itself, always remains.
I think there's been some cloud cover over the moon, and it moves aside, and there's like a strong shaft of moonlight that comes down through the trees, and in the branches these like dark sort of unnoticeable pods start to open up into these giant like whiting silvery type flowers that are opening under the moonlight. They only open on the like strongest full moon nights, and as the petals like expand and flop, they almost seem like they're like breathing or pulsing.
Maybe it's very deep in the forest, but I think somewhere far, far off the beaten path, there is actually just stone ruins. An arch with the upper right corner has long since fallen into decay. It's almost entirely covered in moss at this point. And then beside it is just a stone floor where maybe between the cracks of bricks, some of the foliage maybe has started to kind of come through, but some of those stones still peek through.
Very nice. Let's hear about the other regions of the Vale. Patrick, whenever you're ready.
So, south of town, the Forgotten Lake's misty shores sit in a soft and somber contemplation of their gentle tides. Old Man Merkel, a local fisherman, snoozes soundly on his boat, what ventures up to the surface this evening before returning to the cold and comforting depths. So he's out there in his little fishing boat. You know, it's the planks of wood are all different, like, hues and colors from being patched and repaired at different times. And he's got his, like, old sort of beat up, a bit rusted tackle box and stuff there in the bottom of it. But he has sort of slipped down half under one of the benches and with his coat up under his head, gently snoring with just, like, one finger still left on the fishing rod that's out in the, you know, got a line out in the water and nothing's moving. But there's a ripple on the water and the moonlight seems to like break up and go into these spots and almost starts to swirl. And you realize that it's not just the moonlight. There's a little swarm of bioluminescent things under the water. And as they get closer to the boat, several of them detach from the school and start crawling up the side of the boat. And you see these little, like, sort of grapefruit-sized octopuses with their glowing sort of lights swirling on their sides. They climb up the side, and several of them go down to the side of that tackle box and pull out a paper-wrapped sandwich. Carefully, quietly unwrap the crinkling paper from it. There's a moment when Old Man Merkel sort of wakes up and turns, and they, like, all their lights go out, and they camouflage to the color of the boat. You see their little octopus eyes, like, looking up at him. He turns over. They finish unwrapping the sandwich and then just like zip down into the water. And there's this like multicolored sort of tornado under the water as they're all like ripping up the sandwich and having a feast of it.
Amazing. Jazz, you want to tell us about the next part?
The Moonlight River carves its ever shore course through the valley, which legends say was once a trade route for the lost three peoples of the Vale. In the bubbling and babbling tongue of water, How does the river reminisce of those elder days? The river remembers the cleaving of its surface as great big boats sailed atop it. It remembers also how the sound of the wind was different then. Not just wind, but always mingled with a thousand voices. Human voices singing praise and prayers and laments for those that the river had taken. It remembers being worshipped. It remembers how the banks were never empty, and how when the rains fell, it fell for days and days and days until it swelled and took most of the forest with it. These days, it is much more confined. It does not mind, but as a river, it remembers that everything changes. And as long as it is steady and goes on, who knows? Maybe one day the great boats will return.
All right, Kevin, take us home.
The high slopes of the Singing Mountains mark the northernmost part of the Vale. Monsters dwell in the old mines, and where once there was song, there is now only silence. What wonders are hidden amidst the crags, revealed only by the light of this evening's moon? In the deeper parts of the crags, there are old feathers the size of people, indicating that a long time ago, perhaps, or maybe still hiding there still, just haven't been seen in a long time, are birds much larger than those we typically see in crossing town. But I think also revealed by the light of this moon, there are topical for this month, pale blue flames that only appear under the light of the moon, and they don't have any braziers, they don't have any sconces that they're attached to. They just kind of float in the air and maybe drift 1 foot in any general direction. Little will-o-wisps, essentially. And they are only seen on certain nights of the year.
Fantastic. Another night passes and another day dawns. Let's talk about what's going on. I get my sheet up here. So, our first little tutorial day. We are have a little scenario called Preparing for the Jellymark Jamboree. The Jellymark Jamboree is the first proper festival of spring in Crossing Town, commemorating an old tradition of the early settlers jarring preserves of seasonal fruits, both for trade and personal enjoyment. Today, the Jamboree is a community-wide potluck that boasts a colorful variety of delectable dishes, each making use of the festive fruits. A question for each of you. Are you contributing a jelly, jam, or similar fruit-based concoction to the Jamboree this year? If so, what is it? If not, what stopped you?
I think we see a little scene of Hazel. It's very early. She has obviously worked all through the night. There's like this cauldron that is bubbling, and she's looking in it, and she's taking like a bunch of jelly from it. And she very enthusiastically turns around, big smile, and we kind of see Marlene looking and just shaking her head. The townspeople just... It's not that they're suspicious. It's not that, you know, they don't want to. It's just maybe not the best thing. So they've been very politely asked to maybe just not.
I think we see Kai coming down from his upstairs bedroom, you know, just pulling his flannel shirt over whatever he's wearing underneath it. He grabs his backpack, and there on the counter are six jars of apricot jelly from the few trees that grow around his house. His parents have been making it for literal decades, and they're not going to stop now. Only now it's Kai who tends to go and bring them to the jamboree itself.
I think Scott doesn't have anything, and he makes a big deal of like, oh, I didn't realize that was such a part of I thought there would just be a couple of people doing jams or like a contest. I'm so sorry. You know, next year I'll know better. And there's like a cut back to his apartment where the little kitchen in it has like pots full of like burned and blackened fruit, and there's like sugar spilled over half of the counter, and like 13 different dishes piled haphazardly in the sink, and the wafts of smoke are still sort of clearing. No, I didn't know at all. If only I'd known, I could have made something.
Incredible. The jamboree is being set up on Main Street, complete with rows of tables and benches, banners hanging between street lamps, and of course, countless serving trays of everyone's chosen contribution. Despite the buzz of activity, however, this year's celebrations feel a bit stunted. The smiles of the townsfolk are genuine, but don't quite reach the eyes, which seem more tired and worried than usual. The Jellymark Jamboree, indeed any festival in Crossing Town, should be a time that folks are guaranteed to forget their troubles for a time. Maybe there's something you can do to help everyone relax? We're all familiar with the mechanics of CFB games at this point, but just to communicate again, this is where we'll introduce the questions and opportunities. Very bare bones for this tutorial day scene. The question is, what is the nature of the collective anxiety the people of Crossing Town are feeling, with a complexity 4? Answering this question allows you to help the people of Crossing Town forget their troubles and just simply enjoy the jamboree for what it is. Now, we have a special rule in place for this scenario. Unlike usual clue gathering through moves, which is indeed how... we will probably get to that this session for like one of the main kind of mysteries of the game. This scenario is just going to, it does not have any information moves or exploration moves, as they're called in this game, to gather clues. Each of you get to frame one scene where we see you preparing for the Jellymark Jamboree alongside the side characters you have a connection to. As part of the scene, and you know, we can role play in it, as part of the scene, at some point you must describe something interesting you observe or overhear around Crossing Town or the surrounding environs that'll count as a clue for this question. It cannot conclusively answer the question as per the usual rules go. I will note importantly for all of us awareness, with one scene each before like we have to then answer this question and then move into the actual like next part of the game, there's only 3 of you, which means that this is a complexity 4, so you will be rolling at a -1 unless someone had a move that guarantees them they get extra clues or something, just in general. The intention behind this, I'll kind of peel the game back for a quick second, is as a tutorial for new players and even old players alike about it's okay to roll with -1s and it's not the end of the world. And also there might be ways to mitigate that. Who knows? So it's a little soft kind of nudge of sometimes it's just difficult to get things done, but it doesn't mean the story stops there. It is daytime in Crossing Town. You have each of your own individual lives. You have your jobs, your responsibilities just throughout the day. Whoever wants to go first, where do we find your character with the other resident of Crossing Town they have frequent interactions with? We can frame up the scene. You can ask for questions. We'll role play it a little bit. And at the end of the scene, you can tell us or you can think on it for a minute if you need to, decide just what that clue you want to contribute to, maybe figuring out just what's got everyone down. Anyone want to go first? If not, I will pick. Kevin.
Okay, a little bit stream of consciousness here, so I might adapt things on the fly.
Love it.
We see Kai and Valerie, and they are... can we say there's a water tower in Crossing Town?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we can say there's a water tower.
Sure. They regularly break through whatever defenses, lock, gate, whatever would stop them.
The defense is a single wooden picket fence with an open gate that no one pays attention to.
Yeah. So it's got... They call it the secret spot. And it's where Kai's been hanging out there for years, and when he helped Valerie out, this is where he went to go like talk, but they get a good view of Crossing Town from up here. And and they're watching, and you know, he's bemoaning the state of Crossing Town and wanting to get out. And Valerie points out one cloud in the sky is moving in the opposite direction from the others. And like, isn't that weird?
I think like Valerie kind of like cocks her head. And like when she points it out to you, she doesn't vocalize it. She just points it out to you. What does Kai do?
Kai also has never seen anything quite like this before, but maybe it has something to do with this like vague malaise that's been hanging over the jamboree. But he has no way to explain it. Yeah. Certainly not during daytime.
I think we see like Valerie and Kai just like standing there on top of like the water tower, just like watching the sky, just kind of for a truly like eternal moment of just the pace of which a cloud moves across the horizon. And Valerie just kind of like deadpan looking out towards just somewhere else now. She just says like, damn. Most interesting thing part about this town was a cloud today. That sucks. And she like very dramatically in that 16-year-old teenager way just like throws herself under her back of just like dramatically.
I get the sense that it's a little bit deeper than that, Val. But
you're always looking deeper into things, dude.
Yeah, you're right.
Crossing Town ain't that deep.
Oh, I know. It's got its shortcomings, that's for sure. Yeah.
A slow drag from her cigarette, which a 16-year-old should not be smoking these, but yeah, good luck stopping her.
Yeah, I think both of them actually are smoking. In fact, I think that is a shared side hobby of theirs, is they don't want to do it in the company, in polite company.
Mm-hmm.
And Kai like kind of nudges his backpack with his foot, and he's like, I gotta go down to the jamboree and set this up and hand these over. I just don't want to.
You are making your own bed, Kai. She just shrugs.
Look, my family's been doing this for years now. It's...
Yeah, and my dad broke his back doing hard labor for this town for years, all right? I don't want to end up like that, so I have made the conscious decision to not have that happen to me.
If only it were that easy.
It is that easy. Trust me, Kai. You might be older, but I'm smarter. I know. I see through something that's kind of like see-through, but not really see-through. You know what I'm talking about? Like,
yeah.
Yeah. The word for that.
Translucent?
No. Flicks her cigarette butt off of the tower and just kind of like watches it like lackadaisically fall through the air. There's like a small little pile of them probably from her doing this a bunch. And she just kind of like is like staring down kind of like apathetically at Crossing Town in some kind of reverie.
You know, I could just stand to sit here and watch the clouds for a little bit longer.
That sounds boring.
Well, then what do you want to go do, Val?
I want to go literally anywhere else. I've never been farther than the county fair. She's told you this 100 times. Like, literally every time you hang out, she says that exact same sentence. I've never been farther than the county fair, Kai.
Okay, what's stopping us?
I gotta finish high school, man. She, like, slumps down again. She's like, I got somewhere to go, like, you know, after I finish, you know, the music school in Delta, maybe, if I'm lucky. But then, nothing will stop me, Kai. And I ain't coming back for anyone or anything. Not even my brother. Love him. Not coming back. I will miss you. I will miss your dog. I will miss, occasionally, this spot. But other than that, nothing's stopping me. Other than the system.
Yeah, the system. It'll get you. But I believe in you. You know, keep working at your instrument and you'll get out of here.
Thanks, dude. Appreciate it as always. Go to your like lame little jelly festival or whatever.
You should come. Maybe you'll find something interesting.
You sound like my brother.
Yeah, sorry. But you should, really.
Maybe.
Or don't. Jeez. Or don't. You know, I'm not your dad.
He doesn't respond to that part.
I think he has to at some point pick up his backpack and, you know, finish a cigarette and climb back down the ladder and head over to, is the jamboree like happening in like a town square?
Yeah, it's like Main Street that kind of like runs through the center of Crossing Town is where they're going to be setting things up for the festival proper. So you can begin making your way down that direction, leaving Valerie to her rebellious reveries atop the water tower. Now let's cut over to another character. Let's cut over to Hazel. Let's get some magic in our lives right now. Kai, if you'd like to, I know you mentioned your clue a little bit there, but if you want to consolidate that in the chat for us of what you wanted your defined clue to be. Hazel, set the scene with you and Marlene and whatever's going on.
Yeah, I think it could be fun to sort of pick up from that little scene that I narrated. So she's like still holding the jellies and Marlene is kind of like shaking her head and Hazel just she has like this flash of panic of like, oh, I fucked up, they're not good. And then she like looks and she kind of understands the unspoken thing that maybe the villagers like don't want it. And she says like, oh, well, all right, jamborees are childish anyway, and they didn't even give us like a firstborn or something in return.
Firstborn? Like we like pan over to like Marlene, who is like in her like kitchen. Like I think this is in her cottage, maybe. Like this is where we are, is like right now. She like it, which is truly just like witchy, like lesbian lumberjack kind of like cottage vibe of just like hanging bushels of herbs, but also just like an eclectic assortment of just random things and all that. And she is like, please do not tell me I heard you use the words firstborn. Have I? She like kind of like sets like the pot down and she goes, Hazel, for the last time, darling, that is not how being a witch works.
Well, I read it in a book, a proper book, with, you know, all the black leather and the eye on the front and the scribbled language and everything.
Oh, okay. You read a book. Okay.
I did.
Impressive, Hazel Thorne, picking up a book, learning magic from the folks who had time to write words down on a page and not the folks who had the time to properly study and practice the very complicated and respectful nature of magic. It's all double, toil and trouble, yada, yada, yada. That is not how magic works, Hazel
Thorne. Well, it was in calligraphy.
Oh, calligraphy. Not how magic works. Requires time and sweat and tears, and yes, literal tears sometimes, and connections. Now, don't
and
ever...
And firstborns.
No. She kind of like puts like a finger up to you, just like, hush.
Hazel like turns away to put it back, and she has like this very triumphant smile of a teenager that managed to get a rise out of their parents. But like from the back, she's still like very prim and proper, like she's obviously just won this argument.
Yeah, Marlene is just going back to throwing whatever she was into a pot and just like muttering under her breath, just being like, I swear, kids these days keep getting dumber. And just throws it in there and just like huffs and just says, look, I'm not saying that there ain't validity in learning magic from books, but in my experience, which need I remind you, child, that my experience vastly outweighs yours. Also,
mm-hmm.
You have vast experience. I have vaster. Okay. So
the vastest.
Yes. All right. What was I talking about? God, yeah. She like goes back to her pot and just like, you've run me off track again. Look, I'm not saying don't read books. There's absolutely useful information to be found, probably, but just don't ever go doing what I do without a little help or only going off of the assumptions of one source of information you've read. Trust me, Hazel, darling, that only ends badly.
We see... from Hazel, like, still turned, there's, like, this expression of she's heard this 1,000 times, and the more she hears it, the more she just has, like, this knee-jerk hatred for it. And she knows it's true, but there's just this part of her that is spiteful because she's had to hear it so much. She kind of puts the jelly bag down. She says, yes, of course. I just... don't see why suddenly they don't want our jellies anymore. I promise I didn't even put anything weird in it. And with weird, I mean magic, because they say it's weird.
She kind of like has this weird look and she says, well, funny thing about that. They didn't say nothing about me not bringing anything. They just didn't want you to bring anything.
Of the one time that I got some of Shadow Lord's hair in it, because
I think
it's not that bad.
I think it had more to do with the fact, darling, that you were claiming to sell fables or fantastical fruits or something magic. We don't sell magic fruits. We don't give out magic fruits. You want to know why? Because there are no magic fruits. Because if you wanted to harvest a magic fruit, you'd need to do magic.
Well, it was ironic, as in magic shrooms, and it was going to give them very funny dreams.
Yeah, so I think you've self-answered the question as to why they are preventing you from bringing anything this year, Hazel dear. Look, I am preparing some honey plum preserves. They are mighty difficult to prepare, especially this time of year, and I've had it up to, well, about, you know, here with that. If you want to help out, if you don't want to feel excluded, I could definitely use some more bushels of herbs from the garden. I need it to be properly spiced to offset the sweetness. I know that you are bored and more than a little vindictive in your ramblings there. But why don't we work together on this one? And I can tell the good people of Crossing Town that this is from the both of us, and we can patch over the incidences of last year. Right? We build bridges, we don't burn them, right? Unless they deserve to be burned. Let's be very clear. Some bridges need to be burned.
Well, I don't think that I have anything to apologize for, but fine. Also, I don't feel included. I don't care what they think about me. And then she'll like swish her cape, like swish the shawl that she's very deliberately draping like a cape and a cloak, and she'll swish it and she'll storm out.
As you're storming out, Marlene calls over her shoulder being like, don't forget to wipe your boots. I don't need mud sprites running around my kitchen again. And then she, you slam the door. Very good. Very good. I'll let you think on a clue. We'll double check with you. Let's get that scene with Scott now. Scott and Mary Lee. What do we want to set this up?
So what did you say the name of the shop was again?
Ariadne's Loom.
Ariadne's Loom, yeah. So I think we're in the shop there, and Scott is like really excited because for once they're working on something that's not just patching up overalls and, you know, fixing holes in shoes, that sort of thing. I assume the town has a mayor?
Yes, Mayor Anna Limney. She is the mayor of Crossing Town.
So I think there is a tradition every year that she comes dressed extravagantly in a new outfit as the mayor of Jellytown for the day. And so Mary and I are working on this year's over-the-top berry-themed jelly mayor outfit. But it's got to be top secret. So there's big, like, curtain hung halfway through the shop and a, like, top secret by order of the mayor sort of sign there. But, of course, everybody wants to get a sneak peek of it. So there's just this, like, stream of people over the course of the day who come in and asking for, like, a spool of thread or I need a replacement thimble or can you fix this one sock sort of thing, hoping to like get a peek behind the curtain or like do some jelly based bribe to convince Mary to let them see it, that sort of thing.
Oh, I love that. That's amazing. Do we think this is one of those situations where it's like Mary has to like tailor the costume while it's on Mayor Anna? Like she's like, so like it's behind the curtain. We see like Mayor Anna Limney, who is a middle-aged woman. You normally is very casual, like dressed like smart, casual business attire. Very tired vibe, but very just like happy to be here kind of thing as well. And we just see her dressed in this giant gauche jelly themed mayor costume with like, I'm picturing, like the mayor of Munchkinland, the tails and the hat and everything.
Very big hat with like a Carmen Miranda amount of berry fruit on it.
Mary's attending to that. Anna's wife, Pauline, is just sitting there in a chair, just trying not to like laugh too hard of just this display. What do we see Scott? Is Scott running around tending to the various external affairs, or is he helping more like directly with this?
He is desperate to be working on this, but yeah, he's the assistant, so he keeps getting called to the front to like deflect customers and go get that like one needle that they need or whatever, and so he's desperately constantly like running back behind the curtain to help with like a couple of stitches, but then the bell rings and he has to go run out front again.
You're running hither, thither, and yon, just fully like doing a lap at this point. I think at one point, like you have to like bring like a customer's request like directly to Mary, just like communicate with her, and she just kind of, which as a reminder, very well fitting clothes, dark hair that's been tied back. Mary Lee is just sitting there and just kind of like hangs her head sideways and just goes, would it kill that man to, I don't know, invest in something a little sturdier than a windbreaker? And she just like, she's like, you can tell him, I cannot keep sewing patches over claw marks, not when they're coming just about every single week. Give me money and time, and I'll get him something proper. That would be
claw
nice.
Marks.
Yeah.
That sounds dangerous.
Probably. But he seems fine. Keeps coming in.
It might be something leather or like with some quilted padding under it.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. I was thinking something a little bit sturdy. I told him he needs a proper uniform. If he's going to be engaging with dangerous whatever that he's getting up to. Mayor. And Mayor Annalyn is just like in a weird pose, just like trying not to get poked by the needle. And she says, oh, no, you're fine. Like, just kind of like. Mary like looks at you just kind of like, I don't know. What do you got? What are your ideas?
I was thinking if we sort of put some a little metal bowl right up here at the top of the hat, it could protect it if we wanted to put some like sparklers up there, you know, something a little pyrotechnic, exciting.
Mayor Anna says, I don't think, and then Pauline says, no, I absolutely think that's a good idea. You should do that, right, Anna? And Anna's like, okay. Mary just kind of just like looks at you with a smile. And she says, here, you've got capable hands. You take over. I'll deal with him. And she like goes like throws open like the curtains. And she says, how many times have I told you? And then like just goes back and goes deal with the customer. Leaving you to tend to that. And Anna's
no,
like.
No, see, we'll put him right here. You'll look like a really fancy dessert.
She like slowly looks over at Pauline and Pauline just kind of goes, well, you are a really fancy dessert, darling. And Anna just goes, hush, like not in front of the townsfolk. Like, don't do that. Anna is just kind of like, sure. Nothing's going to catch fire if we do this, right?
No. Most of these fabrics are very fire resistant.
Oh, I'm not talking about the uniform. I'm talking about things in the town. And Pauline then chips in and says, I don't know if I like the fact that you're concerned more about the town catching fire than you are, sweetheart.
Just, try to avoid any bunting or streamers, confetti, things like that at the time. It shouldn't last more than a minute or two, and then it'll be fine.
Okay. All right. So away. She just kind of like resigns herself to her fate.
Yep. No, if you could just lean your head back just a little bit. Yeah, you don't want to like tip it to the left. Like, oh, that's going to.
I feel myself tipping. No, it's tipping.
That's going to be
tipping.
A little bit of a problem. Okay.
Oh my God. Amazing. Clues. Let's talk about, I love that scene. Let's talk about like what, okay. So we got Hazel's on there. Scott, do you have an idea for a clue, that you'll gain, or do you want to take a moment about that?
Yeah. So, let me just look at this clue to see. Is it... I think there's sort of, a time-lapse view from the like street outside of the shop as we see like all these people coming in and out over the course of the day. And there's this large oak tree in the middle of the street that the road sort of wraps around. And as the first customers come in, there's this like bright red cardinal that comes and fluttering in and lands on one of the boughs. And we see like sun going across the sky and people zoop, 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 in and out of the door. And we see like three more cardinals come and land on the tree, and then like a dozen. And by the time it's noon, there's like over 100 bright red birds just sitting on this tree, all chirping, and their feathers like ruffling, and it sends these like waves up and down the tree, catching in the sunlight, almost like flame, but also like bright crimson red. They're not doing anything. They're just sitting there and they're fluttering and sort of chirping.
Okay, so I love that. In addition to that, the clues. Jesse, do you want to say that what your clue was? Because you put that in the chat, but just vocalize.
Yes, absolutely. I think the recurring dream that Hazel's concoction gave the people, where the townspeople had recurring dreams of a pumpkin rolling over an empty field.
How mysterious! And then combine that with Kai's observation of a single cloud moving across the sky in the wrong direction, Okay, so there's no time to dilly-dally. I mean, like, the jamboree's imminent. Once again, the question that we might want to put some thought to is, what is the nature of the collective anxiety the people of Crossing Town are feeling today? We have these three clues. As per a normal CFB game, the answer question move is, let's form a theory using these clues, and then one of you will roll to see how correct you are. Now, there is a slight modification to the role for this type of community focused job in this case, which is on a 7 to 9. You do it, like the thing is correct, it's solved, and as part of like the goodwill oriented, you all get to mark a point of experience. On a 10 plus, same deal, it's just you also get like 2 points of experience, I believe. And I'm looking at my notes right now just to make sure that's correct. On a 12 plus, which is impossible for you guys, unfortunately, in this circumstance. But in a 12 plus, for other community jobs, it would be things like, you also get some of them is like specific to like certain scenarios, but like in some cases it's like, oh, you get like a condition called a job well done, which you can clear at any time to get advantage on a role of your choice. So, you know, stuff like that. Whereas a miss depends on the context of the situation. In this one, it is, unfortunately, you know, like you haven't been able to abate any anxieties. Things, you know, continue as planned. Nothing's going to stop that from happening, but you will each take a condition based on how you feel that you couldn't really kind of do anything in that case. You know what I mean? So anyway, we have those three little clues. Let's hear a theory about what we think. Do we need a quick little break to think over that, or are we good to just kind of jump into it if anyone has an idea?
I kind of have an idea, but I'm also fine with taking a little break if we want to.
Let's take a quick five. Yeah, all right. Okay, so we took a quick little break. We have three little formed clues. I'd love to hear what people are thinking for ideas. Whoever wants to kick things off, be my guest.
Jesse, you said you had part of an idea.
Yeah, I'm thinking that this is a spring festival, right? So it's sort of like the whole idea is, you know, like new life, new beginnings. And I think that these dreams of that pumpkin, which, you know, is very much a symbol of fall and sort of like the decay of things, rolling over an empty field. And then all these birds that look like red, like something is aflame. I think that the townspeople are afraid that like the harvest is going to be really, really bad. Like this new beginning is going to be, you know, like not a very bountiful beginning. Like there's something, maybe the cloud as well is like indicative of they're afraid that the weather is going to turn. And there's like, if we can somehow prove or do something that's going to either show that, you know, we have the tools to work around that, or that it's not going to be bad, or like give like a counter sign or symbol, then that is going to make them feel a lot better.
I see what you're saying. So you're saying that it's like everyone seeing omens everywhere that's mm-hmm. making them feel like, you know, like the birds being like, oh, that the tree, like the resembling a fire. Okay. So like, that's okay. Kevin, you have thoughts. Go off.
I just kind of want to riff off that. Like the thing in my head is it's like when stores put out their holiday decorations like 3 months too early, everybody's getting like signs of autumn in spring, and that like summer is just maybe a fun holiday in Crossing Town. It's everybody's favorite holiday. School's out, weather's nice. And if people are already thinking about the autumn, even though it kind of has cozy vibes, it also has that the pool is closed, school's going back in session. And so like, I think that is lingering over people's heads. So to riff off of what Jazzy is saying, I think like reinforce, if we're going to try and do something about this, then yeah, reinforcing the idea that spring is here, summer is coming, everything will be fine. Yeah, that's my contribution.
Scott, you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think with the cloud and the sort of like weirdness in the natural world, I think there is also a weather element to it. Like we're supposed to get like yearly spring storms that are like really overwhelming. We talked about that, like the memory of the river that used to gorge and overflow. We still get those spring storms that the farmers and everything sort of rely on, and they're just, they haven't come this year. They're late, or maybe they're not coming. And the longer they're taking, the more people are getting worked up.
Oh wow! Okay, I really like that. That's actually a really cool concept of like peripheral like omens that are like just putting everyone on edge. I like that a lot. I'm not gonna lie. That's cool. All right, who wants to roll for it? I mean, it is unfortunate with a minus one, but like, who cares? I want to see this. Who wants to volunteer themselves for?
I can roll.
I'd say Jazzy had the first little step there, so I think Jazzy, you should take it.
All right, Jazzy, take it.
Boy.
2d6 okay. Minus one.
Well, it would have been a 10, but it is a 9 because I've been a minus one.
Hey, that's still really great then. So everyone can go ahead and tick off an experience, which is called a resource in this game, and a kind of ad hoc paint the scene question about this is, how do you then help bolster people's sense of spring? What do you do to bring that sort of seasonal air to abate people's concerns?
I think we have to make an omen, or like find an omen. We have to have something good to counteract all this.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. I was
How interesting.
The same.
Okay, I'm here for it.
That's I like loud. That.
Yeah.
I am not a music. Well, I'm not a musician, but I think Val, we were saying, like, is trying to get into music school. So maybe Kai will go and talk to her about, you know, maybe, hey, Kai would be a lot more creative about it than I would. But
yeah, it's fine.
Like just dropping some hints of like, man, it's been a long time since I've heard a very springy, fun spring sweet or music on whatever instrument Val plays. This is like, yeah, man, it's been so long since I've heard that, and the radio station sucks, and you know they're not gonna play anything like that, so like maybe you should, I don't know.
Love that. Make the teenager do it.
Well, I like that because I was also thinking like Scott feeling guilty over not having a jelly thing would have like brought his violin as well to be like, but I could play something, I could help entertain, and so maybe I could like learn that song and we could, I don't know, try and do something.
I kind of love the idea of Valerie and Scott forming this like ad hoc musical duo to perform at the Jellymark Jamboree. That's really fun.
I kind of like the idea. You gave the mayor like a sprinkler or like a fire thing that was going to go off?
Yeah, like sparkler sort of.
I kind of like the idea, like whether it's like naturally so, or maybe Hazel has like with magic, like a little bit of a hand in it, that like as it goes off, like the mayor is worried, like it's going to go wrong, something's going to catch on fire, but it actually like sparks like, you know, maybe like a little bit of a halo almost before it like goes off, or it goes like really high and it like has this like sunny vibe omen to it. You know, like you're in good hands. That. You're absolutely fine.
Like time it to be right at the like big crescendo or chorus of the song, and then the mayor does her display and it looks freaking awesome.
I love this. That's so good. And that is how you all successfully, through no collaboration, just kind of the right place, right time, fell into place. The three of you were thinking the same thing. Can watch the collective anxieties of the people pull back and those smiles become a bit more meaningful, the eyes a little less tired, and people allow themselves to relax. And as the day progresses, The sun sets and the day grows later. The Jelly Mark Jamboree goes off until disaster strikes. And we are going to move into our first night now and introduce our first oddity job, which is one of the names of things in this game. This oddity job is called the Goat Gourmands. Now, I will say the text for the introduction of this mystery is not complete yet, so I am largely just going to kind of be throwing stuff at you, but I have some questions written out as well. The Jellymark Jamboree goes off as it has every year with people coming to sample and also serve various concoctions of dishes that incorporate jellies, jams, or preserves in some ways, whether that's a dessert or a dish where savory meets sweet. All the same, people have lined up Main Street with the Jellymark Jamboree decorations. There's music, there is laughing, and there's a bolstered sense of community in the spring evening. All of that is disturbed when a few panicked shouts begin echoing from different parts of the jamboree. And before anyone can have really a clear idea of like what's going on there, like a street lamp falls over. Thankfully, no one's hurt, just inexplicably like topples. You hear like the breaking crack of like some like wooden fixtures, and like even a banner like snaps free from its tether and just kind of like swings, covering the mayor in a tangle of the banner in her jelly mayor costume. And in the chaos, all of these incidences have signs of people eating through like things. Now I'm going to pose this to one of you guys. I have a question here, because let's see who has the highest reason. That would be Kai. Kai. So I'll preface it with this as well. So interrupting the Jellymark Jamboree, a collection of anthropomorphic goat-headed people have been rampantly and panickedly coming through the area, eating things wantonly and just causing general mayhem and chaos. But Kai, you directly witnessed one of these goat folk gorging themselves on fruits and furniture right before the chaos started. How could you tell their appetite was a result of anxiety instead of malicious intent?
I think something about like there's just fear in their eyes. They're trembling. I think one actually got really close to Kai, or Kai got really close to one of them. Happened to just be right around the corner. Oh, that's it. Yeah. So Kai happened to just be like right around the corner around one of them, and you're like almost accidentally bumped into one, and saw up close and personal, like, if it was malicious intent, it might have attacked him. But he got to see up close and personal this sort of like horror expression, or anxiety, just sort of like locked on its face.
Fascinating. After the everything just went higgledy-piggledy, like people kind of like scattered trying to help like fix things that are beginning to like fall over and things that are broken. People were panicking. Like food was like strewn about. And in moments, the jamboree was not what one would say was ruined, but has come to a rather unexpected finale. When the air clears, these strange visitors, these goat folk, have fully dispersed and disappeared into other parts of the town, and are running rampant doing who knows what and who knows why. And the mayor is trying to figure things out. Now, interestingly, Hazel, I have a question for you. You grew up hearing tales of the mountain kin from your grandparents. What was your favorite story? And additionally, what about that story makes you suspect these goat folk wouldn't have come down from their mountain home without a without a strong reason?
I think her favorite story is about, it was about a knight who was valiant but grew arrogant, so arrogant that he didn't properly, that he like gave up respect for the gods and nature because he believed that he was more powerful than any god, that he could defeat any evil. And in his arrogance, he slayed a divine goat sent by one of the gods that is like sent to be, you know, like the one of the goat folk, like the mountain goat folk. And he was cursed because of that to himself become a goat and sort of like, you know, learn forceful humility in being a goat that was, you know, not, he wasn't accepted by any farmer. He wasn't allowed in any towns. He was, you know, like he was treated as a pest. He wasn't wanted. And so this cursed knight traveled and traveled until he ended up in the mountains with these other ghost folk. And instead of casting him out or like driving him away, the others took him in very, very slowly. Like the story, most of the story is about that very tentative respect that is growing, like almost, you know, they are on one side of the river, he's on the other side, but slowly, slowly, slowly they learn to trust each other until he finds a new place. And with this newfound respect and humility, he has a chance in the end to have the curse be undone and return to humanity, but he chooses instead to stay. And it's, you know, like legend has it that they're never seen again. So Hazel knows, like, there's this part of them that could have been human, that could have gone to us, but they explicitly refused this. Like, they wanted to stay where they were, and they wanted to have their own ways.
Wow. In the aftermath of things, nothing is resolved, nothing is fixed, but it seems that you three are the only ones in your own collective minds of, like, you see the discontent, the anxiety, and like the vibe that it's just this is not right, something's going on here. Question for all of you: why do you feel particularly driven to help resolve this situation yourselves, where no one else is?
I think for Hazel, it's definitely this feeling of she wants to protect these mountain folk. She doesn't want them to be seen as something bad, because of that story that she loves so much. But also, I think a part of it is, like, she kind of resents that, like, it's not polite to talk about magic except in the night. Like, she thinks that's a really silly rule, and she feels like that's why she is sometimes left out. And I think, like, she feels if she can maybe protect these goat folk, or if she's, like, on their side, like, someone has to be, right? And obviously it's her, because they have something in common.
I think Scott is sort of like overcompensating with helping with this, because in that moment of chaos when all the like streamers and stuff fell down on the mare, Scott saw, like, there was a moment when part of the streamers, like, there was one little ember left from the fireworks, and it sort of like glowed for a minute like it might catch fire, and like there was a world where suddenly everything caught fire and everything was ruined because of Scott. But it didn't. It went out and it's fine. He said it was fine and it was fine, but he's got to help now to make sure that no one thinks about how he almost burned everything down.
With Kai, I think because of where he lives and his proximity to the mountains, seeing disaster, near disaster on this scale, reminds him that, this is his parents have lived there in this house for years and years and years, and something is going wrong with the way that life has been. And that's kind of been the song that he's grown up with, is this is the way things are. And this is the clearest, most immediate, direct evidence that the way things are is not working or is untenable. And if it's not addressed soon, who knows? But that's really not an option. Not addressing it is not an option.
Well, very, yeah, I know, we got what you mean. yeah, that's great. So the first question you have available on the Goat Gourmand's oddity job is, were the goat folk forced out of their home, or did something attract them to Crossing Town? That is a complexity two question. Answering that will unlock the next appropriate question. We also have, in the vein of similar games like The Between, a job specific gate prompt, the Gate of the Potluck, which may be marked once at any point. All of you will get to narrate that's prompt. I'll be sure to throw these details in our little makeshift character keeper here. And I feel like before we go to Stars and Wishes, before we end the sessions, I'd love to at least get like a line of actions from each of you, and just and let's do a first couple of things. So yeah, Kai, what are you intending to do?
Well, they came from the mountain. I live near the mountain, so I think I'm going to go take a hike. I'm going to try going up the mountain and seeing if there's any evidence of disaster in somewhere closer to their home turf.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. Very good. Very, very appropriate. Scott, what are you thinking about doing?
I like that. I think Kai like says something about that, and Scott hears someone with a plan who's actively doing something. He's like, "Yes, I am also helping and actively doing something." And it's also like he is dressed for this party. He is 100% not dressed for hiking up a mountain, so this seems like the perfect time to do it.
And what about Hazel?
I think Hazel is going to cast a spell, a divination spell, and I'll, collect some goat fur, maybe some dirt that the hooves trample, that kind of stuff, and then I'll see what I get.
Absolutely. We'll talk about the magic move in a moment, because this is very similar to the Brindlewood Bay occult move, but I'll read the text here in a little bit about that. Awesome. Actually, let's read that now. Where is my reference sheet? Here it is. No, go back. There it is. Yeah, so I'll just read the magic move out loud. Since this is separate from your lay looker thing, this is just doing magic, which anyone's welcome to just do magic by doing the magic move, but similar to the occult move in Brindlewood Bay, that could be dangerous. Now let's see. I cannot find. There it is. Haha. All right, the magic move text is in the gameplay chapter. Work with me, Google. There we go. Okay. The magic move. When you engage in an activity related to the supernatural or magic for the first time, imagine what your actions would look like as a move. Say what triggers the move and roll with sensitivity. So you're divining, it sounds like. Okay. Okay, absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, this basically looks like it's like a derivative of the exploration move, or the clue finding move. But it's you're specifically using some fictional you're using some fictional specificity to like have like this divining element to it.
Yes.
Can you can, yeah,
I
tell.
was thinking, like, if you have ingredients or like personal items of a certain person, maybe you could like cast it in and you know, like divine, see like some kind of flashback or maybe something like in the future, maybe that's like not always as clear what exactly you're seeing, but kind of, you know, like in the cauldron bubbling, you can see like a clue of some sort.
I think that's super cool. I love that. Go ahead and roll plus your sensitivity.
That is a 10.
It's a 10. It works. And you and I will write this little divination move together. We'll add that to our list of moves. It is now a move that everyone can use following this text. Yeah. And I think I'll give you a clue. Yeah, absolutely. I owe you a clue from my list of clues here. Let me go ahead and take a look at that real quick. And then, so go ahead and like frame this up. Frame like the casting and the preparation and like what happens to make we know it's working. What is the magic?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think maybe as the others are kind of walking past her or getting ready to go on their hike, Hazel is still very prim and proper. She obviously has like a little basket with her, probably used to collect fruits and whatever. And she's picking up some of the goat furs. She's picking up some of the like the grass that was trampled. She's breaking off some splinters of the wood that was chewed through. And we see her return home. She starts boiling the water in this cauldron. And then very graciously, she picks it up, puts it in. And then we see all these ingredients start to sink. But rather than the water being clear and like us being able to see it sink, like the bubbles take over the entire surface. Like it's boiling, just the entire surface boiling. And then I think we get like a poof of, you know, like smoke as it just suddenly goes poof. And in like that smoke, we see an image flash.
Very cool. Yeah. You see, I think I'll go with the divining angle of seeing something in the present, that the image clarifies. You actually see a group of these goat folk in the vision. They are, now that there's not like a bunch of chaos in your scrying upon them, you can see them a bit more like clearly. You know, bipedal peoples with horned goat heads, cloven feet, dressed in some like homespun vests, baggy trousers, shaggy roan fur of blues and yellows. And you see this gathering of them somewhere outside of town. They are all looking towards the sky intently, as if searching for something. That's your clue. And as the vision kind of boils out of the cauldron, the smoke fills the screen, and we transition to outside of Crossing Town with Kai and Scott walking up the trails that lead into the foothills of the Singing Mountains. Let's have a little bit of role play just en route.
God, okay. If you could just like slow down for just a minute. I'm sorry, I caught my pants on something. I just need to. Oh God, it tore.
Yeah, all right, sure. Here, let me pull this aside. Pull aside a little, you know, some thorns or branches. Watch your step. It's a little rough.
Ooh, so we're almost there, right? We've got to have been hiking for at least 5 miles.
Oh no, we've probably been about 1 mile, maybe.
Oh God, that was a mile?
Okay, maybe it was 2-3 miles. Yeah, sure, 3 miles. Yeah, you're doing great.
Yeah, I'm here to help. You know, I just I feel like that it's my sort of responsibility, not that I'm like responsible for anything, but it's just like a person's responsibility to help out in situations like. Do you get a lot of goat people in town?
Right, you're new here, aren't you?
Fairly, a couple months. There just aren't as many rampaging goat people in the city, is what I'm saying.
rampaging goat people is new and different, but we've always had tenuous connections with it's still night, right? We're still allowed to talk about this.
Yeah. Yes.
We've always had tenuous connections with the neighboring spirits. I don't know if I know all of them. Never really took the time to get terribly invested in it, but you know, my parents have been in Moonlight Vale for all their lives, basically.
So have you been to like this Goat Mountain place before?
I haven't. I took a couple hikes, but I've not been up in their lands to fully like look around and explore. I really should have, though.
Well, there's obviously no time like the present, and hopefully that present is very soon. Maybe just over that hill there?
Oh, I think we got a little bit farther to go then.
The Singing Mountains are a great mountainous range north of the Vale, rumored to once be home to a people long since departed. Now there's only wind whistling through its crags, and is host to nameless creatures, lurching undead, shambling oozes, and insects larger than a car. Most of the riches long since been destroyed or removed, but who knows what lies deeper below. Let's paint the scene. How do even just the entrances to the mines display the rich history and vast wealth of its lost residents?
I think is there like one entrance or multiple entrances?
Yeah, this like the mountains are like just dotted with like old mining entrances.
So I think there's a particularly large one, like sort of 2 stories tall tunnel. And there are like big gated doors on it that have like serious sort of steel and metal work to them, but the wood inside has started to like dry rot, and one of the doors is like hanging open sort of diagonal on one of its hinges, rust creeping up the edges of things.
I think there are old rusted machines, the likes of which technology the current crossing town has not seen, but like older, bigger machines for digging out just like giant swaths. I mean, a wheel the size of a 2-story house with giant scooping, just like several backhoe shovels on it that would have been attached to like a giant crane that's now of course been rusted and is now unusable, and even if it was, I don't think anybody actually knows how to operate it. But just these sort of like giant skeletons or old carcasses of much bigger, grander machines than what small little crossing town would expect to see in this day and age.
I think the entrance is just huge. Like it's carved, it's been made, and it's just so like it's you know, like giant sized almost. Like you wonder like what kind of machines of what kind of size did these lost residents have that they needed like such doors. And I think like just from peering in it, you can just see like how far the mines really go and how rich it must have been if we dug that deep.
Fascinating. Kai and Scott ascending the foothill slopes of the Singing Mountains, seeing signs of ancient grandeur in the moonlight with the stars overhead. You can see Crossing Town below, its light still visible. No sign of anything wrong, disturbing the peace, just got the heights. What are you doing up here? What are you looking to accomplish?
I'm going to be looking around for signs of civilization, but also signs of disturbance, things like broken trees or trampled foliage. These are goat people, so yeah, some kind of stampede. I'm just going to kind of Sherlock Holmes or Scooby-Doo it around. Checking on small plants and like looking at footprints in the ground, things of that nature.
And Scott?
I think Scott is like following behind Kai for a while and trying to pretend like, oh yeah, footstep, oh, broken twig sort of thing, but it's taking a while, and Kai is looking at a lot of different things, and eventually he just like sits down on a rock somewhere and starts quietly playing his violin.
It's very nice. Aw. Kai, could you give me the exploration move plus your reason? I will read the exploration move just for reference. When you search for a clue, conduct research, or otherwise gather information, describe how you're doing so and roll with an appropriate ability. In this case, yeah, I think reason is the one that makes the most sense for what you're describing.
Do I want to take cramping your style?
That's only from your move?
Yeah. I'm wondering if Scott's cramping my style.
Can you read the move out loud?
Anytime you can get advantage on a die roll if you take the following condition, cramping your style. I can see that.
It's your condition, but I can see that.
The line before it is, you may live in Crossing Town, but you sure aren't going to die there. There's a wide world beyond the borders of Moonlight Vale, and you're determined to see it.
I imagine there's got to be an extra weird feeling between Kai and Scott, as Scott is someone who had that life in the outside world and has chosen to come here.
I also think that, you know, the picture that we're kind of starting to paint with Kai with like presence minus one is like he's really not a people person. And like, I think he was low key hoping to just like have some time to himself, enjoy nature, go on this mountain walk. And now he's got to babysit. And yeah. Now the person he's babysitting is playing a violin. So, yeah, I would like to take cramping your style.
Absolutely. Get advantage on the roll. Take that condition.
Six on the dice plus reason two brings it to an eight.
An eight, a clue with a complication. Let's see here. There is a complication. And I think I know what I'm going to do because it'll be a really fun cliffhanger for the session. So, and then you can think if you want to open a gate to bump up that roll later, which we can talk about next time. But for now, I'll get your clue first. Backed by Scott's music echoing through the crags and rocks underneath the stars up here in the foothills. Let's see here.
And I think it's obviously that town song that he learned earlier mm-hmm. this evening.
Very nice. Playing with Valerie earlier, yeah. Yeah, I think there's a spot, Kai, that you're kind of like, you kind of move away from Scott for a little bit, and you can still hear the instrument playing, and it's just kind of like echoing, gets a little bit more distant. You have some source of light, a flashlight or something, I'd assume. kind of like looking over, like you find these like small little hovel caves. You're not particularly high up in the mountains. You'd reckon that the goat folk probably like lived like deep in the range proper, but if they moved this far out, I mean, they may have left signs of passage. And you find this little like hovel shelter overhang in the rocks that you feel like you're pretty sure that the goat folk may have took shelter in here at some point in their migration or pilgrimage, whichever it may be. Looking around, here's your clue. On the cave wall, you see there are crude drawings on the cave wall that have been done depicting a squat, bearded creature with very angry eyes and a lopsided crown. The letters N, O, M, and E are written beneath its hairy feet. And at that moment, while we cut over to Scott playing the violin, and you're kind of moving back on your way, having spotted this and are looking around, we hear like the faint kunk of what sounds like a xylophone almost. And I feel like we see like Scott like pause, like listen to that, and then be like, "Is this a xylophone?" And then you hear ding, 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 and you're just like, you play the instrument like alongside, and then you, and then it echoes back ding, 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 ding. And it's kind of like, oh, okay, that's weird, but okay. And coming over like from like a nearby mine entrance, in like old, thick, sturdy like boots, and just wearing a kind of like flickering candle miner's hat atop its head, is just a kind of like bony, like just full bleach white skeleton that has stumbled out of the mines into the mountains this morning. And you realize it's the source of the sound. It looks at you and like, Kai, you kind of turn the corner, you see this as well. The skeleton looks over, like, and like lifts up like a pick and just begins like shambling your direction as like two more skeletons come out of the mine as well, drawn by Kai's or Scott's music. And there are now some skeletons charging after you on the mountain slopes. And I think we'll end the scene there. we'll let you, we'll have that cliffhanger. Let's go to stars and wishes, everybody. Stars are things you liked about the session, whether you want to spotlight a particular moment or role play anything at all you want to call out. And stars are things you're looking forward to, whether they be mechanics or just moments you want to set up. So yeah, whoever wants to go first may go ahead.
This was super cool to set up. I will say I had some fears coming in that like maybe I don't know the touchstones well enough to get into it, but once we got into it, I didn't feel like that at all. Like it felt very clear, and you gave a lot of good like setting for how we sort of approach things. I'll say I really like the idea of the information restriction being on like day and night. How much do we acknowledge the weirdness around us, or how much do we just like sweep it under the rug? I'm looking forward to playing with that. Jazzy, Hazel's hopefully only half serious thing about the sacrificing babies, like her goth commitment to, oh yeah, I am a witch, I'll be a witchy witch, you can't phase me, I'll sacrifice, yeah, fine, was delightful. Kevin, Kai, I really liked that scene of going up the mountain with you. And I love that we made it into the like the cramping your style thing. Like that all makes so much sense. And it was really fun to play out with you. It was the sort of like fish out of water scene that I wanted to get out of Scott. But also I wanted to say you're the first one that threw out a clue for the mystery thing, and I know it definitely like re-diverted how I was thinking, but I think it channeled us down this sort of like weird natural occurrences, strange things happening in the natural world route, which colored a lot of the rest of the session. I thought that was really cool. Wishes. I don't know. I Skeletons coming out of the mine seems very exciting. I'm curious to dig into the weird and sort of magical aspects of the world while we have time before the sun comes up, because then everything goes back to being normal and it's jelly and, you know, streamers down everywhere. I want to see the weird while we're here.
I have to give a star to like the very last moment. We were kind of talking about it on break off recording, but like having played enough Brindlewood games and Trophy, it's like resisting the urge to make things like to bring in the horror and bring in those elements is really hard. But there's something about the way the skeletons were described, maybe it was the xylophone bones, maybe it was just like the little miner hat, but I'm like, oh my God, Minecraft skeletons. And like in there it was like, oh, I'm here now. I absolutely am locked in. And I can't wait to see like the cozy version of Brindlewood horror. I'm so ready for Plushy Cthulhu. I gotta have a star because Mayor of Jellytown was so good. And then star to Hazel's animal names. They are all fantastic, and I want to learn more about them. Wishes. Now that I have miner hat xylophone bone skeletons in my life, I just want more versions of every, trophy and Brindlewood bit of horror. I want them all plushified. So I want to see as many of them as possible. So yeah, echoing Patrick's wish, I just want to see what weird looks like in this game. So, and I think we're gonna get it. So super stoked for that.
Stars. I mean, echoing what's already been said, but also for Kevin, I really liked the dynamic that you set up with Fel, like very quickly, like that big brother vibe was really coming through, and then like the very defensive, like, whatever, I'm not your dad, but then like the absolute silence was really hilarious. And also a star for Alex. Like, I thought the way that you played Fel was like really, really funny. Just, like these super dramatic teenagers, like, the most interesting thing was a cloud. Just like so pitiful, and it's so funny. That was great. Yeah, for Patrick, I adore Scott's himbo vibes. Like, he's trying so hard, and I love that for us, and I love that for him. And I just, yeah, I think like that fish out of water, that you're doing it really well. Like, you just get like this very earnest sense of somebody who like trying really hard and just like wants to be this best version of himself, but doesn't quite get there. And it's very fun. I think you're absolutely fantastic at like the octopus scene as well, like with the sandwich. That was absolutely fantastic. I think you've been like doing so great at like making it weird and funny. I think that was absolutely fantastic. Yeah, for Alex, I love all the NPCs that you've been playing. The "you are a delicious dessert" hush, like that was gold. Absolutely wonderful. I already shipped them. I also really
Good,
love
because they're
just,
married.
yes, I love them. I love the absolute indignation that you put on the word firstborn. It's like the absolute, like, how dare you? I thought like that was a really fun scene to just like kind of vibe off each other, with Hazel being like a bratty, annoying, like, I take myself too seriously. Because I realized like very fast, like, I don't think I cannot bring in the horror, so we're just gonna bring in the horror in like a funny way. Like, she's just gonna be like, she's gonna try to be the really creepy goth in this pastel cottagecore version, and it's just going to look very silly, and it's not gonna work. So that was really fun to kind of get that in. And I loved how like easily you rolled with the divination at the end, and then like the magic move and everything. That was really, really fun. Very excited to see where that goes. For wishes, I'm very intrigued by like this tutorial setting. I'm very like interested in when we are going to introduce what information. I'm also in like intrigued in how much information it's going to be, that it felt like it was overwhelming at first. So I'm like very interested to see like how that's going to gradually build up. I'm also I like that it seemed like there's two types of questions. Like there's like day questions and night questions, or like the jamboree thing and then like the oddity job. So it's like sort of the two vibes. That's really interesting to me. So interested to see if there's like more of that, or if that was like a tutorial version, or like how that kind of vibes with each other. Other than that, yeah, I'm also intrigued that we start out like not knowing each other. So I am very interested to see like how are we going to get together? Because like a lot of CFB is you kind of tend to go out on your own because it's like easier to get more clues, and everybody has like different fields that they're good at. So I'm very intrigued, like how are we going to make it so that these three people decide like, oh, we need to be the watchers, we need to be together, like this is a thing. I'm very, very hyped for that.
Yeah, stars. I mean, this was a really fun session to play with you all. This is like the first really like proper like in-depth Moonlight Veil multi-session play test, because we've only ever done like one shots before. I mean, like start out of the gate to like there's a lot of like even with this new kind of like tutorial thing that we've put in here. It's a lot of like it's a lot of setup. You're not really doing a lot of actual mechanics for a while, but it felt good. Like it, 'cause it was like you guys were doing really like this, the narrative felt very strong. So like star to how you guys narrated just kind of these like these first few prompts of setting up at the bonfire. Also the first little magic unseen. I loved the octopus eating the sandwich. Like thought that was so clever. The memories of the river was really solid as well. And then just Kevin, your contribution with the mountains there, and like just like the subtle like floating blue lights. Again, like there is such like this like open vibe of like what are the wonders and old magics of the Veil? And right off the bat, I just felt like, oh, I this is so cozy and so fantastical, and I'm in it. And then there's this kind of like mundane melancholy that like kind of like underlays the setting in general anyway. So when we were doing the day scenes, like again, like for with like Kevin, your Kevin, when you had Kai with Valerie, that whole scene, like even though like it was there was a lot of humor there, there was this like these two people shared this kind of sense of discontentment and longing for a greater world. And it's like it almost felt like Kai's was beginning to butt against Valerie, because Valerie is so indignantly rebellious, whereas Kai is at least letting himself enjoy certain parts of his life here. So I don't know, it felt like this kind of like looking at the youth with kind of like sense of like, I wish you were happier. Like I really do. So that was a really solid moment. Yeah, I really loved playing off the ideas you were throwing with the Jelly Mayor concept, Patrick. That was so funny. So funny. I loved that. Like immediately painted this picture of Anna, and then by extension the rest of the characters in the scene. But like it just set a whole vibe. It set a tone that I'm absolutely here for. And yeah, again, Jazzy, fun fact, Meg, my co-writer, and I love role-playing Marlene. Like Marlene is easily our favorite like side character of the roster that we just love role-playing. She's so sassy, and just like then truly having a kind of like rebellious goth protege to kind of like spar with her is so good. I love the like just being like the firstborns being like no, and being, I read it in a book, it had an I on it was written in calligraphy. That was so funny. I loved that. All around, everyone was just killing it with their responses today. I really feel like the vibe was there. So that was exciting. Yeah, and again, stars to the use of the dreamer move to have Scott cramping Kai's style. That was great. That was a great little narrative intro in there, and also set some like really good character interactions. Yeah, wishes tie into what each of you have been saying. I mean, I'm very much looking forward to continuing with the tutorial, because to go off what Jazzy was just saying, there are two types of jobs in our writing for Moonlight Vale. There are the daytime community jobs and the nighttime oddity jobs, which are the more mysterious and wonderful ones. We're still trying to figure out how in the actual gameplay loop community jobs play into things to a certain degree. But oddity jobs are what you'd expect from like a Brindlewood mystery, the between threat kind of thing. They are the weird and wonderful things that you have to problem solve to keep the ship going. Once you finish this oddity job, there's a little brief thing that will be the hook into the rest of the game. Like, this is because this will lead to the founding of the Community Watch. And things like paint the scene, like questions for your shared base of operations unlocks once that happens. It's an old farm, very Stardew Valley, that you guys will get access to as like a base of operations for the Community Watch. We get some paint the scene questions. We get the mechanics for, how to manage like the balance of resources and also like investing in your town to help it grow. There's also mechanics for like how the corporate interests of Mojo Corp might begin to manipulate things behind the scenes, and the campaign elements of supernatural things coming to a head. There's a lot behind the scenes that, like, I feel like this is actually doing a really good job of like setting it up, not just narratively, but like the vibes of everyone leaning into the setting more. So it doesn't feel just like a lot right out of the gate, you know? I'm excited for that. And I'll explain this more like when we're actually doing it, but there is one of like the biggest alterations to the overall like structure of a game like this, for, like from the between or public access even, is I'm not going to explain this in depth now because it'll be when we're doing it there. But like one of the elements Meg and I wrote into this game was like similar to how in like Stardew Valley, there's like a time, like you're always aware of time because it's always ticking away and you want to make sure that you're like being productive, but you want to make sure you're focusing on like one area versus another just so you can do something. The way that the unseens work in this game is that actually once you're in it, like once you're the community watching of every other thing, like each day you guys choose, what are we focusing on as the community watch? Are we focusing on the daytime or are we focusing on the nighttime? And that'll be the phase of play that you spend the most amount of time in for that cycle. The other phase is given the unseen of like, all right, you know, we want to focus on the nighttime this time. So we're going to just breeze through the day. We have to keep our heads down. We have to get work done so we can afford to like have the time to do this later. And there are daytime and nighttime unseens that like the cinematics of characters in Stardew Valley, they explore the lives of the people of Crossing Town at different times of day. So that's that mechanic. I'm very excited to explore that based on the prompt responses as well. So I'm really excited for the next session and also for you guys to and get your first supernatural clue on a 12 plus when exploring things, because then we can start doing some campaign sheet stuff. I don't know, it's a four part, but I'm already just like in it for like all the moving parts. I want to see them, give them to me now. So yeah, that was great. Thank you guys so much. Any other stars or wishes before we wave goodbye? All right then, let's all wave goodbye to the camera. Bye.